Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Brett Johnson's in our studio. It says here, cybersecurity, cybercrime, fraud, and identity theft expert, once on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the studio, Brett. Is all of that true?
Unfortunately, well, the most wanted list, unfortunately, that is true. And then the rest is true as well, yes.
You're speaking it to Paul, is that right?
I am this evening. I'm speaking for Kelly Pope's class, going in there talking to all the students.
Kelly's been a guest of ours here on WGN a few times. She's terrific. What a great class she teaches on forensic investigations,
right? Forensic investigations, yes.
And she's got a good podcast.
Oh, it's great.
So are you on her podcast then?
I was a guest on her podcast right before I launched my own podcast, so yes.
What did you do?
I built the first organized cybercrime community. It was called Shadow Crew. It was a precursor to today's darknet markets, and it laid the foundation for the way that modern cybercrime channels still operate today.
What year are we talking?
This was Shadow Crew appeared in 2001. I was actually engaged in cybercrime from probably 96 on through 2006.
A lot of us were just getting our first computers, if we were lucky, in 1996. You had a computer and you were hacking back then?
I did, and I was. And the types of crime that I was committing was all types of financial cybercrime.
Give me an example of what you would do.
Credit card theft, phishing, account takeovers.
Give me an example of how you would do one of those things.
So phishing, for example, is a form of social engineering. And when I say social engineering, what I mean is that it's not a really high-tech crime. It's a crime that relies on the attacker, the criminal, knowing how to manipulate human psychology. He understands a human well enough to get that person to give up access, information, or data that the person usually wouldn't.
So you would say what?
You would send an email that looked like it came from your Bank of America account, and you would say, we need you to change your password, or there's a problem with your login, and we need you to update your security profile.
And how many of those would you send out?
2 million a day.
And how many would you get in a positive response for you?
Positive response, we'd be happy at 20 to 30,000 a day.
You would get the account information you could then tap from 20,000 people?
Well, not only the account information. You get the password, the login, the person's name, social.
What would you do with that information then?
You would either sell it or use it yourself.
How much would it cost to sell? How much would you get if you sold it?
So even today, if you're looking at those types of information, so PII, personal information, a person's social security number and date of birth sells for $2.90. A complete identity profile that's called a fool's within these environments. A fool sells for anywhere from $30 up to $140.
Why would you sell it? Why not just take it and go raid somebody's account yourself?
Well, the reason why is because there's so much information out there. So if you're within a group, and I operated with a group of 10 to 12 people within a larger group of 4,000. So if you're within 10 or 12 people and you've got 20,000 profiles that you're getting in a day, there's no way you can cycle through all those. So you have to make money some other way by marketing them to other people.
Would you do that, though? Would you just take somebody's stuff and go, wow, I now can draw money out of it? Is it that simple? You would be able to take money out of my savings account?
Depending on what you were trying to do. So savings account, for me to do that, back then and even today, you have to do what's called an ATO, an account takeover. So you'd basically spoof the phone number of the victim. You'd call into the bank. That way the bank sees the phone number of the victim, not the phone you're calling from. You'd discuss that. You'd talk with the customer service agent and get them to change the account.
And maybe that works, maybe that doesn't. So you've got this for 20,000 people, and any one of them would require a lot of work. Easier to just sell it to somebody else and let them raid these accounts.
Absolutely. You find out in these environments that the sellers of product make a lot more money than the actual people committing
crime.
Prior
to that, were you involved in any traditional kinds of crime? Did you rob banks or steal candy bars?
Geez. I'm from Eastern Kentucky. So I come from a family of fraudsters. My mother was this large profile fraudster, stealing everything from a 108,000-pound Caterpillar D9 bulldozer to taking a slip and fall in a convenience store and trying to sue the owner. That's the type of family I came from.
This is your family business.
It was. My first crime was at age 10. My mom was this parent who was negligent. She was very abusive mentally and emotionally. So she would abandon or leave me and my sister alone for days at a time. She left us one time. We didn't have any food in the house. I was 10. My sister was 9. My sister walks in one day with a pack of pork chops, and I'm like, where'd you find that? And she was like, I stole them. And I'm like, huh, show me how you did that.
So was there ever then, based on that, any remorse or guilt? Did you have any moral compass about the rightness of what you were doing?
No, and I didn't meet my first decent person until I was a junior in high school.
So were you or are you a sociopath? I mean, is that the right description of somebody who literally doesn't have a rudder that way? Or do you now look at it and go, I was surviving?
I don't think I was surviving. I think that I had no real moral compass. Now, sociopath, I don't think a sociopath, because now I'm able to look back and see the harm that I caused, and I really regret all those decisions.
So when you were raiding accounts and selling them, did you feel bad about that?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Being online, it allows this separation of the victim. So you don't have to see the victim face to face, and you view that as data. So you're able to convince yourself that you're not victimizing a person, you're just using information.
You were one of the first posses then of people that would go out and do this. Were you doing that in an office with a bunch of people, or were you all sort of fanned out across the country?
Fanned out across the globe. We were international, operated in several countries, the Ukraine, India, overseas in the UK, Europe, everything else.
How would you find these people to work with?
It's kind of like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. So I built the site, and people, because there was no site like that at the time, people flocked there in order to engage in crime.
Would you say this is true, though, that people that have that kind of skill could put it to work in legitimate ways and not have to commit crime?
Absolutely. But what you find is with the people who are committing crime, it's a choice to not work and to take the easy way out. And that's what I did.
But sounds like work to me, too. It must have been kind of thrilling.
There is a lot of adrenaline that goes through, a lot of the thrill of being able to be the small guy who is taking over an account or hitting a company that's worth millions of dollars.
What's the biggest stunt like that or crime that you pulled?
I was the guy who came up with tax return identity theft. So the reason your tax refund is delayed every single year is me. I came up with the idea of using people's information to file tax returns, have it deposited onto prepaid debit cards or online bank accounts, and cashing out like that. I stole $160,000 a week for 10 months a year, got to the point where I could file a tax return every 6 minutes. That was...
You weren't getting caught.
Without getting caught, yes.
What would you do with the money?
So
spend it.
Spend it. A backpack, like you see, a kid.
Is that a stupid question, B?
So a backpack,
because
you don't have a lot
of costs. I mean, it's
no,
you and
no
a computer,
cost.
Right?
But what I did was a backpack, like you see kids carry to college, that will hold $150,000 in 20s. I would file taxes Sunday through Wednesday. On Thursday, I'd take a road trip and plot out a map of ATMs. Friday through Saturday, I'd cash out, put $150,000 in the backpack. I had a.
I'm sorry, what do you mean cash out?
I would go to ATMs, pull money out of the ATMs, pull those tax refunds that were deposited onto prepaid debit cards.
Oh, that's how you would get it.
Right.
Oh, you would take the debit card.
Right.
And
take it to an ATM.
So the IRS sends you the debit card. You then take the debit card with value on it and go to an ATM machine and drain it.
You can get the IRS to send you the debit card, but debit cards are bought today. They're bought at Walmart. You can buy them through the mail, everything else like that. I was buying, 200 of these things a week, filing 200 income tax returns, cashing out on a weekly basis. I'd have $150,000 in 20s in a backpack, come home to Charleston, South Carolina, have a spare bedroom. I'd open up the door and chuck the backpack in there.
Why were you doing that? I mean, at some point, what's the matter with you, criminals?
Well,
you're so
can't
smart,
put it
you're
in
so
the
dumb.
Bank.
I know that, but if what's the object of the game? The object of the game is to have like $6 million, and then you don't have to commit crime anymore, and you don't even have to work anymore.
But you see, that's not the thing for a criminal. Everyone that engages in cybercrime, you get to the point where you no longer realize the value of money. So it's not. Yeah, you're stealing money, but it's more than that. It's about
it's
status.
Game.
It's a game. It's solving a puzzle. So you get all this money, you chuck it in a bedroom, and then one day you open the door and you've got this room full of backpacks, and you're like, I have to do something with this money.
Okay, so this is all fascinating.
Wait, can you tell me the number again of how much money fits in a backpack?
$150,000 in 20s.
Okay, just want to know that.
Yeah. Like,
in case you ever need it.
Yeah, we have a better chance of getting a backpack and filling it with rocks than we do what you did. But, however fascinating all this is, it doesn't do us any good unless you can put it to use for me. And that's what we need to talk about
Sure. Next
on WGN. Speaking at DePaul University, our guest is a cyber security expert. He made his way up the ranks as a cyber criminal. His name is Brett Johnson, and he joins us on WGN Radio. You are talking to the students over DePaul, right?
Well, Kelly Pope, a professor over there, has a class, and I like to go in and I talk to the students in classes across the nation.
You're consulting with companies and governments across the country as well?
Across the planet. I consult with the FBI, Microsoft, financial groups.
You're on the cover of AARP magazine right now.
I am, yes.
Why is that?
I did an interview with Doug Shadell up in Seattle. He liked it, so we did an article about the dark web and the way these criminals, like I used to be, now operate.
Prey on older people.
Older people, absolutely.
So you've been telling us a little bit about your life, your childhood, your adulthood, and the kind of crimes that you committed. You described how you'd do fake IRS returns, turn it into cards and cash, and take it home and pile it all up. How'd you get caught?
My wife, I financed my first marriage by faking a car accident. We used the money to go to university up at UK, University of Kentucky. I lied to my wife for 9 years about me breaking the law.
You faked a car crash, got insurance money?
And got the insurance money, and lied to her about that, lied to her about everything I was doing. I told her I was an eBay reseller until the cops showed up one day.
She didn't know that you were doing this.
She did not. And once she found out, I kept telling her for another 6 years that I would quit, that I was stopping, that I had stopped. That it just lasts so much longer.
You guys must have had a nice lifestyle, though, huh?
Yeah, it was, money-wise, it was a nice lifestyle. What was not a nice lifestyle was the stress and anxiety, because you're always worried about the police knocking at the door, driving through the neighborhood, one pulling behind you, anything like that.
And so one day they did. I mean, so how did you finally go to jail?
My wife leaves me. I go through this huge depression, start seeing a psychologist, get lonely one night, start dating a stripper. And I'm the guy that falls in love with the first stripper he sees.
That's because you're so handsome.
Oh, yeah. We made the front cover of Forbes. The group that I started, Shadow Crew, made the front cover of Forbes August of 2004. Headline, Who is Stealing Your Identity? October 26, 2004, the United States Secret Service arrested 33 individuals, 6 countries, 6 hours. I was the only guy that got away.
This big sting. So now you're on the run.
I was on the run. I was not really on the run. I was in Charleston, South Carolina. I was tied to that area. So I didn't think I was going to get caught. I went through all my stateside cash because the girl that I was dating, the stripper, she was an addict. I paid for her rehab, then got it in my head that I could just buy her way out of addiction and fix her. I think if I fixed her, that I'd be able to fix me at that point. So I spent a lot of money, went through all my stateside cash on her. Shadow Crew gets busted. I'm afraid to commit any type of crime at that point, as far as credit card fraud or tax fraud. So I start running counterfeit cashier's checks, and I'm picked up running those in Charleston, South Carolina.
Well, that's old school.
Very old school.
I mean, that's Frank Abagnale.
It is Frank Abagnale, yes.
Is your story like his?
It's very similar. I mean, we both had an escape from prison. We both had the bad family upbringing to a degree, things like that. It's
so
weird. That's very
so
similar.
Fake cashier's checks?
Yeah.
God. What a stupid way to go after all of the high-tech stuff you
yeah.
had.
And we used to teach people never to run checks, and that's exactly what I went into.
So then you go back to jail?
No. They picked me up at February 8th, 2005, and they give me a job. Secret Service hired me.
So they finally get you,
yes.
And then rather than wanting to jail you, they want to hire you.
Right.
That's the Abagnale kind of story.
That's it. They let me sit in the county jail for 3 months to get a taste of it. They then hire me, and I'm the guy that the night that I get out, I start breaking the law again while working for them.
Oh, no kidding. So now they've given you a leash, and you're dumb enough now to, you're not going to go to jail, you're going to have legitimate income,
right.
And you still break the law.
And I still break the law. Right.
We still haven't gotten to how you can help me keep people like you from doing that stuff to me.
Sure.
Will you stick around after the news?
Absolutely.
312-981-7200. A lot of you are texting as well. We're continuing our conversation with Brett Johnson, cybersecurity expert, one time on the FBI's most wanted list as a cyber criminal. But now he's done one of those stories where they say, okay, well, if you're that good at it, instead of throwing you in the clink, how about you work with us? At least as we went to break, that was where the story sort of left off, right? That the Secret Service caught you writing these bad checks.
Right.
And they didn't, did they put you in jail?
Well, what happened was is the FBI and the Charleston, South Carolina Police Department ended up arresting me. Within 45 minutes, Secret Service comes in, takes over the case. They let me sit in the jail for a week, fly in from New Jersey, and they say, what can you do for us? My answer was, anything you want me to, keep me out of jail. So they let me sit there another 3 months and gave me a job working for them.
While you were in jail or when you were out of jail?
Once I got out. I sat in jail for 3 months, and they let me out, and I began breaking the law the same night.
You're like the drug addict hooking up with his dealer on the way back from rehab.
Yeah, I just wouldn't stop. Would not.
But you were also helping them.
I was targeting individuals. The only people I was not targeting were the Russians that I was associated with, because they will kill you. So
you were working with the Russians?
I was involved with many Ukrainians, Dmitry Golubov, who's a member of parliament over there now, Roman Vega, first dump seller. These guys were the guys who established, if you look at Dmitry, he ran the website called Carter Planet. It established modern credit card theft as we know it today.
Do you have any insight for us on what you think is happening with the Mueller investigation and the relationship between the Russians, the Ukrainians, and whoever else over here?
Sure. If you look at cybercrime...
This is a sidebar. Sure. Answer this, then I want to go back to how you can help us. But your point...
If you look at cybercrime, historically, it's been about cash. So there are three reasons cybercrime is committed. It's status, cash, and ideology. Status and ideology have been on the back burner until recently, and now you get this whole thing about ideology. So we're seeing that shift from cash to just doing it because a nation state doesn't agree with you. The way Russia works by hiring the guys I used to work with, the actual cyber criminals. They'll hire these guys to say, hey, go out and do this for us. Whatever information you get, we want this specific data. The rest of it you guys use and sell for whatever you want to do. So when you're looking at Russia today, the chances of them actually doing that, of trying to hamper the election or anything like that, I think it's 100%.
And you think it starts from the top and works all the way down?
Absolutely.
That it's endemic in the government there and, say, the Putin administration?
Absolutely. To give you an example, the way that cybercrime works in Russia, and I knew this from Dmitry, knew it from Roman Vega, all these other guys, they were allowed to break the law as long as they didn't break the law inside of the Eastern Europe bloc.
So they didn't care if you were robbing from America or China?
Not at all.
These Russians and Ukrainians. Back to the United States. So then, so you can't help yourself. You continue to commit crime even as they've released you and said, work with us. And then you got caught again, right?
It took about 10 months for the Secret Service to realize I was breaking the law from inside of the Secret Service offices. They find out, revoke my bond. A judge reinstates my bond 2 weeks later. They didn't tell the Secret Service they let me out, so I take off on a cross-country run, crime spree, steal $600,000 from ATM machines in a four-month span, wake up one morning, sign on to one of these criminal websites, and there's my name, United States Most Wanted, beside of it.
Could you pull up a computer here and log on to one of these dark sites? I mean, if I knew the right buttons to push, could I get on?
Absolutely.
And what would I see when I got on there?
You would see, so it's a forum type. There are two types of structures. One is a forum type structure like Reddit or something like that.
Sure.
Where criminals talk about the crimes they're committing. They network with each other. They figure out how to commit crimes, things like that. The other structure is a marketplace type structure. So where credit card information is sold, or bank account information, people's personal information, all those types of elements are sold as well.
And if the FBI or I were to see that, I'd say, well, look, here, well, let's get them. But I guess because it's digital and computer, we don't know who or where. So this is happening right under the nose of the officials and they can't stop it? Is that
true? Well, actually, law enforcement has actually gotten really good about stopping it. The problem is you've got so many players out there, so many criminals out there. For example, Alphabay shut down July 5th of last year. One website, 240,000 members. So they shut that down, and it becomes a game of whack-a-mole.
240,000 criminals.
Criminals, yes.
Yeah.
So you shut that website down, they're not going to go away. This is their job. This is their career. They just find another website to migrate to.
You eventually were caught again and went to jail for 6 years.
Well, I was caught, went to jail, then escaped prison after I was caught.
Of course you did.
Of course, yeah.
And then you went back to jail?
And then I went back to jail, finally.
And you were there for 6 years?
Yes.
How long have you been out?
I've been out since 2011.
How tempting is it to go back to your old ways?
Now it's not. What happened was, is as I started speaking and consulting, I've been doing this for 2 years now. As I began, I was always the guy that, I'm a prepper. So in case everything fell, I was like, okay, I can go commit synthetic fraud or run a marketplace or something like that. And what happened was, is I
thought that all preppers had duct tape and guns.
Not
that
all.
It was rudimentary. They're cyber preppers too.
Right, absolutely. So what happened was, I had this aha type moment. I between my sister, my wife Michelle now, and the FBI, they kind of took me under their wing. Microsoft flew in and talked to me one day and offered me a job, and I was sitting there about 2 weeks after that, and it hit me all of a sudden. I was like, I'm never going to commit crime again, and I just knew that.
Did they pay you enough money to take the temptation away? Or the temptation wasn't about the money ever anyway, right?
Never about the money.
Is it a good living, though, being a cybersecurity expert for Microsoft?
It's very good living, and today I work with multiple companies.
What is the mistake I'm making probably right now?
So there are three things. If you look at how cybercrime is committed, it's not rocket science. These crimes are pretty easy to pull off. It's pretty easy to protect yourself, too. There are three things you can do. The first is you freeze the credit of not only you, but every single person in the house, including the kids, because kids are the number one victims of identity theft. 1 in 4, 25% of all children will be a victim of ID theft. As of September 21st, last month, all credit freezes now are free, so there's no reason you can't freeze your credit.
Some people don't want to do that, though, because then it complicates some of their banking and borrowing operations.
Sure, it's a little complicated. You have to make an extra phone call.
Call the credit bureaus, though, and say, I want you to freeze my credit.
Right.
Okay, that's one thing.
Now, that stops all new account fraud, which is great for kids. For adults, it's just new account fraud. So you also have to monitor all accounts. And when I say monitor all accounts, I mean your credit reports, your credit cards, your bank accounts, your email logins, your merchant accounts. You place alerts on those accounts where you can. For example, Discover Card has a $0 alert, meaning that if a criminal just buys your credit card information for that Discover Card, if he tests it to see if it's alive, you get a text message saying that. So you place alerts on those accounts as well.
Okay, that's two.
The third thing. How many people out there use the exact same password across multiple websites?
Yes.
Yes. I'm the criminal, the former criminal, and I'll tell you, I do it today. It's 80%. Over 80% of everyone does that. Criminals know that. So if you change the password, but the thing is we're never taught how to pick a secure password. We go to a website, it says use so many characters, uppercase, lowercase, few symbols. They never tell us what that is. So what I say is use a password manager. Takes all of that out of your hands. You have to remember one password, it does the rest for you.
That's an app on your phone. You can put in whatever the complicated password is there. You don't have to remember it.
Right.
The app will for you.
Okay. Or it will pick the password for you.
So here's my question about all of that then. So when we hear about, you know, data being stolen and all of that, the bad guy, could they randomly run my passwords around? I mean, they've got to sort of single me out to see where my password is and then try to other accounts I have, right? I mean, it's got to be very individualized. I don't quite get that.
So what you're talking about is what's called credential stuffing. And here's how that works. So your level of awareness may be high enough that if you get a phishing email from what looks like Bank of America, you're going to realize, oh, that's a phishing email. No way that's going to work. But say you get a phishing email that comes from Hulu. Are you going to have that same level of awareness? Probably not. You're going to be sitting there thinking, Hulu, does anyone even watch it? The only thing they've got is a Handmaid's Tale. So that level of awareness is not going to be very high.
So you click on.
You click on, you update the password and log in with the exact same password and login you use for your Bank of America account.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, so now they can watch my Hulu shows, but right. They know that that's probably my Wells Fargo account.
So that's my thing then. So they've got my Hulu password, but then they got to say, well, is he Chase? Is he Wintrust? Is he Bank of America? And try each of those individual. Are there people spending time doing that?
It doesn't take any time at all. It's an automated program.
It runs through every bank in
the world. Right, that 400-pound kid living in his mom's basement screaming for a sandwich without the crust off, he just goes to bed, puts the credentials in there, and while he sleeps, it starts logging into all these bank accounts.
Zooms through them all.
Wakes up the next morning, sees what he's got access to, and starts from there.
I'm going to make some changes.
Yeah.
I know I should make some.
There's also so many sites out there that say they help you protect your credit score and your personal information. Is there validity to that? Is that helpful?
You know, if you're talking about monitoring companies, and I won't mention any names, but those
can, if you want, I don't care.
You know, if you're talking about Identity Guard, things like that, things that monitor that information for you, I like that because we as people, we tend to be very diligent when things start, and then we get lazy. Things tend to degrade. So a monitoring company works well. I like Mint, as a matter of fact. That's a free service as well. You can pay for it. You can go free. The thing is that you have some of these companies that talk about dark web monitoring. We'll monitor the dark web for your personal information. Absolutely useless. Let me save you some money right now. You're wondering if your information is on the dark web? It is. See, I saved you $8 a month right there.
Then what?
Then that's it. Then if you know your information is there, what can you do to make sure a thief can't use it if he has it?
And the credit monitoring is maybe the most critical of these?
I like credit monitoring. I like that. Not just credit monitoring,
that's
but monitoring
all
accounts.
That's only going to tell me if somebody has got my stuff. I guess probably the most important thing is it password protection? Is that like that's the lock? That's the thing that keeps them out?
It's really all three things. So if you're looking at what's called new account fraud, that you have to freeze credit to stop that. If you're looking at account takeovers and things like that, monitoring credit, monitoring all those accounts stops that. If you're looking at, if you're looking at credential stuffing or people logging into your accounts, changing the password stops that. So all three things together. One thing is not really more important than the other. All three things work together to make you more secure.
You know what I'm going to do, Brett Johnson, cybersecurity expert, formerly on the FBI's most wanted list? I'm going to start writing paper checks. I'm going to go all analog. You know, there was a day when this was, I hate to keep bringing up Frank Abagnale because he found a way to write fake checks, but it almost seems like the more I divorce myself of the digital world, the easier it'll be for me, even though it'll be complicated then to get along in the world. I don't know. Comment on that.
Well, I would say that it makes you more likely to be victimized. When you don't have a digital presence, that means that a criminal can go in and make a digital presence in your name and even look more legitimate than you do.
It's not conflicting with my stuff. You know, I had a question about ATM machines.
Sure.
And you've probably done what I'm about to ask. We'll get your answer to that in just a second. Also, 847 texted, ask him what he thinks is the best college degree and or career in the IT field right now. Got an email that said, hey, John, I have driven for Uber for more than 3 years, and I recently drove possibly the most interesting person I've ever talked to. His name is Brett Johnson, and in short, he's the Frank Abagnale of computer hacking. When I drove him, he was going to a bank to talk to them about security. You should get him on your show. Thank you very much to Mike, I think was the guy's name, who was an Uber driver. You were his passenger, and that's how we found you. As a parent, you may have taken out a Parent Plus loan to help your child with their education, and now you're faced with huge monthly repayments that are causing a major financial stress. It does not have to be this way. Let Kaplan Law Firm get your payments reduced by half, sometimes more. At Kaplan Law Firm, they'll let you in on the secret the loan servicer won't. Call 312-294-8989, 312-294-8989, or visit financialrelief.com. Kaplan Law Firm is a debt relief agency helping people file for bankruptcy under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. I got a couple of minutes left. Brett Johnson, before you go, somebody said, what's a good degree for my kid if they're interested in the legitimate side of this field? What do you say?
You know, I like the, it's not a degree, but I like the Cisco security certificates. So you can get a CCIE in security, anything else like that. Anymore, we've gotten to the point in security that you don't necessarily need a college degree to succeed in those fields, but you have to have that training in that.
How vulnerable are ATM machines, and am I making any mistake around them?
They can be vulnerable. So ATM machines, gas pumps, you can have a skimmer on those things. A camera can be pointed at the keypad to capture your PIN number. Not only that, but you can have an overlay over top of the keypad that will capture the PIN as well. So it's important to make sure that when you use an ATM that you cover the key panel to make sure no one gets your PIN. It's also important to make sure that the ATM is an ATM that you trust. Is it in a shady area? Is it in one of these areas where the ATM is just by itself in a parking lot or something like that? That's the type of ATM that a criminal tends to target with skimmers.
Really, because they had access to it, they could put the
right,
gadget
so
on there?
So the criminal can actually spend some time installing the skimmer there instead of installing a skimmer at a bank itself,
yeah,
where staff is always around.
You get through Chicago very often?
I've been here, geez, I think 6 times this year. I love this town, man.
We'll come back to our town again. Are they making a movie out of you?
They are. Right now they're talking about a scripted TV series, something with HBO, Netflix, some of these streaming channels like this.
Did you ever repay the people you stole from, says 815?
Slowly but surely.
Are you doing, was that part of your sentence?
Yeah, I owe $320,000 right now to the IRS.
And you are paying that back?
I am, yes.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for redeeming yourself.
Thank you for having me.
You told me off the air that while you were known, you were a star in this field.
Right.
You want to have the same sort of notoriety, but now on the other side.
I want to be remembered not as the guy who stole stuff, but the guy who was able to turn it around.
Good luck to you, Brett. Sounds like you have. Next time you're in Chicago, sit with us again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.